Well, hello and welcome to Radio. I'm your host, Ray Weaver. And I'm going to do something today I don't normally do. I'm going to do a very scripted kind of thing because I'm going to just play three stories from my book, A Father's Heart. There are a couple of reasons for this. One, I'd like more people to hear stories. And secondly, I'm really, really, really busy at work. So the podcast today are three, what I think are really, really good stories and maybe a song or two for my book, A Father's Heart. And then next week, we'll hopefully get some new material in. But for right now, I hope you enjoy this. And remember, A Father's Heart is available at Amazon, both as an audiobook and a print book. If you like the stories, check it out. Thanks for listening to Radio. I'm Ray Weaver. Three cool stories coming up. Requiem for the Maytag Man. Most of the men in my family are hunters and fishermen. The hunting thing never really took with me, though. No, I shot a few squirrels and rabbits growing up along Mountain Road in Pasadena, Maryland. Back when you could still hunt there, that is. If you tried to hunt now in the same places we did back in the day, you'd like as not wing a Taco Bell or bag a grocery cart. I understand that there are, sadly, laws against that sort of thing. It's hard for anyone stuck every morning and afternoon in endless rush hour traffic along what used to be a backwood country road to imagine how quiet it was around here just a few short decades ago. There were no housing developments or fast food joints. There were no cul-de-sacs. If I had heard the phrase cul-de-sac when I was a kid, I would have guessed that it was some sort of rash requiring calamine lotion. Calamine lotion was big in our house. Every scrape, cut, or insect bite I ever received would wind up pink, crusty, and smelly if I showed it to my mom. I am pretty sure that if one of the alligators that legend held lived in the swamps near the Chesapeake ever chomped off one of my limbs, my mom would have staunched the bleeding with a dish towel, made me a cup of tea, and slathered the gushing stump with calamine lotion. Now, as far as I know, calamine lotion has never stopped anything or anybody from itching or hurting. You just wind up with pink crap under your fingernails from scratching anyway. Anyway, as always, I digress. Back to the hunt. We ate what we shot in those days. My kids can't get behind the idea that I have actually eaten squirrel. And I liked it. We were regular Bubba Gumps of squirrel eaters, in fact. We had your fried squirrel, tastes like chicken, baked squirrel, squirrel stew, squirrel pot pie, squirrel and eggs, squirrel hash, squirrel, you get the idea. Hunting with my dad and his brothers and my grandfather was definitely a rite of passage sort of thing for boys in my family. But I just got to the point where I really didn't like killing the critters. It wasn't any big anti-type anything crusade. It's just a personal place that I came to. So long as I still buy my meat wrapped all nice and neatly from the supermarket, I'm not about to question what anybody else does to eat. Killing animals as trophies, that's another story. And one you're wasting your time trying to sell me on. But not wanting to shoot living creatures in no way meant that I hung up my guns. Some sort of weapon designed to propel a projectile was always a big part of my everyday life as a kid. My cousin Kenny and I would barrel through the woods behind my grandfather's place on mini bikes or one of Pap's ponies with a BB or pellet gun tied to the seat or the saddle horn. Long before Gene Shepherd and A Christmas Story, our mothers were constantly admonishing us not to shoot each other's eyes out, as if that was something we may have tried had they not warned us not to. Okay, the possibility existed. Our hunting excursions did not involve warm-blooded creatures, but rather a truly redneck activity that we called wash machine hunting. This deeply intellectual pursuit involved looking for an abandoned appliance dumped back among the trees and seeing how many holes we could pump into it with the aforementioned pellet guns. If you have never heard the sound that a metal pellet makes when it hits an old Maytag dryer, well, it's hard to describe, but it is deeply satisfying.
Our whiteware hunting days were sadly cut short the autumn afternoon that we spotted a new slice of metal amongst the pines and opened up on it like John Wayne on Iwo Jima. You know, it is truly amazing how much a white 1972 AMC Gremlin can look like an old refrigerator from a distance. I am afraid that the high school boy that had drove his girl in for a little backwoods necking may have been scarred for life. I don't know if he thought his date's daddy had shown up or if the county cops were cracking down on teenage sex, but he peeled out of there like his head was a fire and his ass was a catching. Flashes of bare ass were definitely glimpsed as the occupants scurried from the back to the front seats. Once we realized nobody was really hurt, well, I don't remember ever laughing so hard before or since. We did give up hunting major appliances, though, and that was probably for the best.
Sandy's wedding. Sandy and Lyle were getting married. Well, they hadn't officially set a date, but we all knew it was bound to happen. Even my folks seemed resigned to it. Sandy was almost 18, so if they tried to stop her, she'd more than likely just wait a few months and go ahead and get hitched anyway. My sister had a mind of her own. Besides, Sandy had wrapped my dad around her little finger on the day she was born. He took one look at her raven hair and her ocean blue eyes, and he was hers forever. As the years went on, she would have pretty much the same effect on just about every boy she knew, including, much to my eternal annoyance, most of my friends. Deep down, I knew she was beautiful. Well, as beautiful as an annoying kid sister can be, anyway. Actually, as far as my sister's boyfriends went, I thought Lyle was okay. Now, to be charitable, Lyle was not exactly what you'd call a heartbreaker. He was a little older than Sandy. My dad said too old. Skinny, with big black horn-rimmed glasses. He was completely different and yet, in an odd way, exactly the same as all of Sandy's boyfriends. My dad took one look at him, shook his head, and said, "She's brought home another stray." He was constantly amazed that his beautiful daughter had such a knack for collecting driftwood when it came to men. Sandy seemed oblivious to the football stars and pretty boys that would have given their eye teeth for just one date and took up with the guys that most of her friends would not have touched with a clothes pole. To me, Lyle was a step up from the guys that Sandy usually brought home. At the very least, he seemed capable of more than a two-word conversation, which is more than I could say for most of them, especially her ex-boyfriend, Jimmy. Jimmy couldn't manage much more than a mumbled, "Sandy there," when he called on the phone. Whenever he visited, he reeked of oil, gasoline, and cigarette smoke from the garage where he worked. That is, if he even bothered to come into the house at all. Mostly, he just blew his horn and waited for Sandy in the driveway. Dad would grunt, "Lover boy's here." "He's just shy, Daddy," Sandy would say, kiss him on the cheek, and run out the door. That girl owned my dad. Sandy and Jimmy had been sweethearts all through high school, and our family had endured God only knew how many tearful breakups and joyful reconciliations. We'd hear raised voices, Jimmy's Ford tearing off into the night, and then wait for the inevitable phone calls to start. 10 calls, 20, 37, and finally Dad would make her take the phone. Jimmy'd apologize, and she'd take him back. It was all pretty nauseating. I couldn't figure out what she saw in the guy, and I let her know it. So, how did we get from Jimmy and Sandy to Sandy and Lyle and impending wedding bells? Well, the way I heard it was that Lyle started stopping in every morning at the little bakery where Sandy worked. And after a few dozen donuts and a few dozen rejections, he finally caught her in the middle of a breakup with Jimmy. So Sandy went out with Lyle, and wonder of wonders, she kept on going out with Lyle. She and Jimmy seemed finished for good this time. Sandy started putting things into a wooden box that she called her hope chest. Flatware, dish towels, blankets. You're going to need a much bigger hope chest than the one you have, as long as you'll be hoping for somebody to marry you, I teased her. Ah, come on, big brother. Maybe you can dance at my wedding, she teased back. I was still smarting from missing my senior prom because I was and am fundamentally and totally petrified of dancing and she knew it. I'll be in a wheelchair by then, I replied, weakly. Maybe she figured she owed Jimmy a decent goodbye. Or maybe he just wore her down by constantly calling her at work and at the house. Either way, Sandy agreed to meet with him one more time. If Lyle calls, please don't tell him where I am, okay? Look, don't drag me into this, Sandy. Why are you messing around with Jimmy again anyway? Lyle's a good guy, I said. I'm not messing around with anybody. I'm just going for a ride. I know you don't like him, but he's got a good heart, and we were together a long time, and I think I owe him this much. That was my sister. All heart. Sandy and her strays. The cop told my dad that Jimmy's car hit the overpass doing at least 90. The typical small town rumors flew. Alcohol, anger, drugs. None of it mattered. My sister and Jimmy were gone. There wasn't going to be a wedding to Lyle, or to Jimmy, or anyone. In Sandy's hope chest, I found a Kodak envelope filled with pictures of she and Lyle in Florida. Apparently, after Dad had refused to give her permission to go, she had used the story of spending the weekend with a girlfriend to sneak away. My mom knew. Moms always know. She smiled sadly at the images of her lost little girl wearing Mickey Mouse ears and giant pink plastic sunglasses and said, she told us she was at Diane's that weekend, but she came home crying and said she was breaking up with Lyle. And I asked her why. She just said, Mom, he's not as nice as he looks. And sometimes I just miss my Jimmy. I never saw Lyle again after my sister's funeral, so I never had a chance to ask him what Sandy meant by that. So I don't know. Maybe all of the stuff in Sandy's hope chest was for her life with Jimmy after all. Maybe in her heart of hearts, he was always the one she was hoping for. I remembered that she once told me Jimmy'd be great if he would just grow up a little. Well, Jimmy never had to grow up. Neither did Sandy. Forever 17.
The Letterbirds. I've been sitting on your bed for a while since you headed off to school. I hope you don't mind. I'm holding your pillow close to my face as I look around your room, safe and warm in the scent of your little girl's dreams. Like the girl who lives here, this room is a work in progress. The Lion King, Aladdin, and Nemo still occupy most of the real estate on the walls. But lately, some of that valuable space has been taken up by the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Justin Timberlake, and some handsome young men that call themselves Blue. Now, Disney's finest are not giving up without a fight. They still maintain control over the DVD machine. The boy bands are definitely staking their claim to the CD player. Alas, there is no sign of Barney these days. I fear he has suffered the same fate as the colorful clowns I hung up before you were born. Taken down, boxed up, and flea marketed. Who could have known that you were born petrified of clowns? And again, who would have believed that you would ever say goodbye to Barney? How we sang those safe and silly songs while the big purple dude was still the king of your world. In the house, in the car, at the beach, on airplanes. Much to the delight of our fellow passengers, I'm sure, you would punch the big red button on your first cassette player and sing them and sing them and sing them until I would roll my eyes and plead, not again, Sandy, please, not again. And then, of course, we would sing them again. I think it was tough for you to let the old boy go. Was it really just last winter that we were snowed in and all of the old Barney videos suddenly reappeared? The ants go marching one by one. Enjoyed one big last hurrah in our house. That sweet snowy day, along with these crazy mixed up walls of pop stars and cartoon lions, make me think that you have inherited your dad's sentimental heart. You feel life's natural tug to grow and move on, but you are afraid to leave anyone or anything behind, even big purple dinosaurs. Fear not, sweet girl, for in your short years with us, you have already outgrown many things. Things you may even have forgotten, but your sentimental old dad has a box in his heart for each and every one of them. You may never sit and talk again for hours about the Badawis and the Dadder Dadders, but I remember those folks well.
They moved in with us sometime during your second year and moved on again about the time you started kindergarten. I have no idea from what childhood well these mythical characters sprang, but while they lived with us, you gave them a deep, rich history. There were entire lands filled with kings and queens and damsels in distress. What adventures they had. It's been a while since I've heard from them. I hope they are well. We rarely used baby talk in our house, but your ears in training heard oatmeal as opio and pancakes as pamcakes. Even long after you had learned the correct pronunciations, I would ask almost every morning, "So, what's for breakfast, kiddo? Opio or pancakes?" You would always giggle and reply with one of your little girl versions. This morning, though, when I once again posed our silly morning question, you replied, "Please, Dad, it's oatmeal or pancakes. And anyway, I want a soft-boiled egg." So, I guess even the letter birds will be leaving us soon. I remember the first time you noticed that the geese winging their way south below the gray autumn sky etched ragged V's and W's across the sky. You pointed up and said, "See, Daddy, letter birds, letter birds. The birds can make letters." And we have called them letter birds ever since. Soon, far too soon for me anyway, they will become simply geese again. And I'll lock away the letter birds in that same wistful place I keep the bottlewees and opio and pancakes, the Lion King and his pals, and good old dopey Barney. I know that it's the way things must be, just as I know that there are new and even better days and memories yet to come. So give me a break for sounding like an old waterhead, Sandy. It's just that for each and every box I tape up and put away in my heart, I can feel you letting go of just a little more of my hand.
She held back her tears, but I felt her heartbreak. I told her I was going away. I said nothing would change. She knew better. When I turned around, I heard her say, "Daddy, who chased the monsters from under my bed? Who will play baseball with me? How will I know where to send the invitation to invite the prince to tea? White lace dresses, mademoiselle. Daddy, look what I made all by myself. Oreo cookies, Kool-Aid tea for only two guests, the princess and me. I give up my life to drop just one of her tea. Have back her princess years. We'd sit with our cups on her bedroom floor. She'd stand on my feet and we'd dance. A little girl's dreams turned her dad to a prince and her room to a castle. White lace dresses, mademoiselle. Daddy, look what I made all by myself. Oreo cookies, Kool-Aid tea for only two guests, a princess and me. I'd give up my life to drive just one of her tears and have back her princess years. Across the years and the miles came an invitation from the princess to her wedding day. The end of a childhood I let slip through my fingers. Daddy, will you come to give me away? No fairy tale wedding ever imagined. Ever saw more beautiful bride. I trembled as I gave my little girl's hand to the handsome prince now by her side. White laces for Mademoiselle. Daddy, look what I made. A life for myself. And me. She stepped up on my feet and smiled through her tears and forgave me her princess years.
Well, that's radio for this week, and I'm your host, Ray Weaver. Hope you enjoyed it. Please give us a rate and a review wherever you hear the podcast or the radio show. Tell folks you like it. Tell folks you're enjoying it, and get in touch. There's all kinds of ways to do that through whatever format you're listening to. I'm Ray Weaver, and this is radio.